So, as usual, we are gathered here today to listen to another dissemination of the Lord Buddha's Dhamma in the hope that whatever obstacles there may be in our path to liberation, whatever obstacles there may be in our path to emancipation, to enlightenment, these obstacles may be removed from our path through the course of this sermon. Let us all take a moment to reflect on the reality and on the truth that it is because of the Lord Buddha, the Supreme Buddha, the Peerless One, the Uncomparable One, the Perfect One, that we have this Dhamma today. It is because he sacrificed his life, not just in 1, 2, 3 births, but over many eons, that we have this Dhamma today. In clear, understandable, concise format and form, such that we may all have the privilege to listen to his Dhamma, to understand his Dhamma, and redeem ourselves from the shackles of samsara. So before we commence, let us take a moment to pay homage to the Lord Buddha, bearing in mind that it is because of him that we have this Dhamma today.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa.
Also, before we commence, let us take a moment to invite all the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead, anyone we may have come past in samsara, anyone who might have been a mother, a father, brother, sister, uncle, an aunt, a grandparent, literally anyone who might have helped us in whichever way, shape or form to be where we are today, to have been born humans today, anyone who might have got involved in some way, shape or form to stop us from engaging in the unmeritorious deeds, and having done so, guided us and leaned us towards the meritorious deeds. Thanks to them, today we have the privilege to listen to this Dhamma and cleanse our mind of the defilements that are raga, dvesha, moha. So prior to us commencing this sermon, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves of them, and to extend an invitation now to all of them. Although we may not know them by name today or where they may be, just the action or the thought of extending that invitation now to all of them is sufficient for them to join us. If they may be in such a state, in such a position where they may be able to join us, let us open our homes, let us open our hearts, our minds to them. May they join us, listen to the Dhamma, rejoice in this meritorious deed, and be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So as I make this invitation now, I invite you all to extend that invitation in your hearts and in your minds to all of those beings. May they all join us and listen to the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha, such that they may be able to redeem themselves from samsara.
Samanta chakravalesu atta gacchantu devata sadhammam munirajans sunantu sagga mokkadham Dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta. Dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta. Dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta.
And finally, before we commence, let us all take a moment to accept and acknowledge the fact that although today we may be in robes and you in white, as a result of the healing process that you go through by listening to this Dhamma, the Lord Buddha's Dhamma, throughout this infinitely long journey in samsara, it is not very often that you have had this opportunity. It is not very often that we have all had this opportunity. Plenty of times, and oftentimes, we have only had the association of immoral, ignoble people. And in having done so, they defiled our minds with raga, dvesha, moha. And having been in that state, being ignorant with avidya and tanha, being blinded with avidya and tanha, we may have desecrated, we may have offended, we may have insulted and abused the Aryas, the Samma Sambuddhas, the Paccheka Buddhas, the Arahatta Buddhas, as well as Anagami, Sakrudagami, Sotapannas, be they on the path or the fruit. So, the Arya Upavadas that we might have done in the course of doing so, today block and hinder our progress on this path in Dhamma. Let us all therefore take a moment to seek their forgiveness. May those Aryas, as well as any offense we may have conducted towards the Sambuddha Shasane, the Buddha's ministry, may the Sambuddha Shasane, as well as the Paccheka Buddhas, the Arahatta Buddhas, and the Samma Sambuddhas, as well as all the Aryas, forgive us for any misdeeds that we may have done towards them. And finally, if there are any obstacles to our path, in the progress to our path to attaining enlightenment, may those barriers be removed through the course of this sermon itself. So make a firm resolute, make a firm determination prior to us commencing this sermon. Okay. How was last week for all of you? I learned a lot of lessons. Last week was particularly tough. It reminded me time and time again that I have not freed myself from the vicissitudes of life, from the calamities that just keep coming through one after the other. Oftentimes we talk about jati dukkha, jara dukkha, vyadi dukkha, marna dukkha, the suffering that comes with birth, decay, disease and death. And last week was a stark reminder for me. Now, I've been quite ill last week, throughout most of last week. But I made a solemn promise to you all that for as long as my heart beats, for as long as these lungs can sustain me, I will be here. Even if there's just one of you here to listen to these sermons, I will be here. So to fulfill my promise, I'm here. What we need to do, what we all need to do, is to make the most of that. Throughout the last few weeks, we pondered over this question of what is it that we are all trying to achieve here. over the last few weeks I reminded you all, let's not worry about attaining Nibbana. Let's not trouble ourselves over trying to become arahants. Because I reminded you all, what we need to do is actually to see the truth, to witness the truth. Because once we've seen the truth, everything else falls into place. Remember the Bodhisattva on his quest in samsara came through that infinitely long journey looking for just one thing, King Satchagavesi. It wasn't King Nibbana Gavesi. It wasn't King Arihatta Gavesi. He was King Satchagavesi. You are all Bodhisattvas, each and every one of you. Do you not want to become an Arahant one day? Do you not? I mean, what is the purpose of listening to these sermons? Because we don't talk about the path to heaven. So if that is your aim, then these sermons are quite literally useless to you. Whenever I'm sat on this seat, I talk to you about the essenceless nature of existence wherever. Wherever in this 31 realms of existence, be that in the Brahma worlds, the Deva worlds, the human world. Well, clearly you don't need any detailing about the Preta worlds and the Asura worlds and the hells or the Tirascharan Yoni, the animal worlds. But it's quite easy for people to set expectations and want to be born again in the human world. You know, would it not be great if you had the same children that you have now again? Mothers, do you not wish for that ever? Husbands, don't you wish, oh, I wish you were my wife in the next birth and the birth after that and the birth after that forever? Parents, don't you wish that with your children and children with parents, girlfriends with boyfriends, and boyfriends with girlfriends and friends? So, well, if you want to have the same person again, well, then clearly you have to be born back in the human world, because you're wishing for that particular person. I can guarantee beings in the Deva worlds do exactly the same thing. They want to be born and again in the Deva worlds. Beings in the Brahma world want to do exactly the same thing. They want to be born again and again in the Brahma worlds. Now, because you know of the Deva worlds, you know of the Brahma worlds, and you've been told as a young student of the Dhamma, as a young scholar, that there is less suffering in the Deva worlds, there's less suffering, even less suffering in the Brahma worlds, well, you want all those people around you to be with you and also be born in the Deva worlds. And also to be born in the Brahma world. So humans try to be Devas, Devas try to be Brahmas. If you go speak to the Brahmas, what do they want to do? Actually, they want to attain Nibbana. So we're kind of taking the long way around. But regardless of what it is that you might have, you set your hopes and goals on, if you come to listen to one of these sermons, I'm not going to talk to you and praise to you about the Deva worlds, because that in my opinion is pointless. According to my master's teaching, the Lord Buddha, there is no place in this universe, in this 31 realms of existence, where he said, if you go there, you can be happy and that happiness is forever lasting. Over the last few weeks, I hope you may have had the chance to go back and listen to previous sermons. We talked about how attachment and desire to acquire brings us what? Suffering. We did an analytical comparison, did we not? I told you, don't take anything I say for granted. You're clever people. You take hard fact. You don't just accept someone's opinion and you don't take it at face value. You analyze things. So analytically we compared the dukkha and the sukha. This pelim, this agonizing nature. And we compared and contrasted how, although we think that through attachment we end at happiness, ultimately where it leads us to is suffering. We kept score. 6-1, 7-0, remember? Yes. So, as I said, last week was a stark reminder for me. Because, you see, when you get entangled in the day-to-day chores of life, the rat race of life, and you think only lay life is a rat race. If you're alive, no matter where that may be, whether you're dressed in layman's clothes or you're in robes, yes, we don't have the same battles that you do, but still there are things that we have to attend to. In our monastery, there are 40 other monks, about 20 young monks, novice monks, between the ages of 8 and 15, 16. So, a large portion of my day is spent attending to their needs. Are they fed? Do they eat their meals properly? Because it's one thing to promise parents that, hey, bring your child over. We'll teach them the path to happiness. But when you do so, we take on the responsibility of these children. And I know there are some among you who are looking forward to making that journey, to going forth. So when you do so, oftentimes, sometimes when we have benefactors who bring alms to the temple, at the end of the meal, I have to remind them, please don't be upset over what you might have seen over the last 10 minutes, because what I do is I speak to the young novices who are sat either side of me and check that they've eaten their food properly. Sometimes when we go begging for alms, I make sure that they take vegetables into their alms bowl. I make sure that they take mallum, because you know, as young children, these are not things that you would like to eat. But I have a responsibility to make sure that they do so. I have a responsibility to make sure that they bathe every day, that they brush their teeth every day, that when they go to the toilet, they wash themselves. All these things I'm responsible for. So, whilst you may have to do so for your family, which is what? How many do you have in your family? 5, 6? I have 40 others. So you thought becoming a monk was easy. The thing is, I don't think my purpose in this world is simply to go a straightforward journey to attaining Nibbana. I think there's a duty that I need to fulfill. I think there's a responsibility that I have to fulfill towards the Sambuddha Shasana. We talk about, you know, may there be many hundreds and thousands of Arahatun Vahanses in the near future. We wish and we pray for that. But wishing and praying and hoping never got anything done. You've got to act. You've got to take action. You've got to do something. You've got to make things happen. This is why as human beings we're intelligent people. We have the power to take action. And so what we must all do is take action. Because otherwise if we don't take action, and I remind you about this every week, you know, you come along to sermons, which is all great. Please continue doing so if these sermons are of value. But you have to take action. I can only give you 20%, 80% of what you do is what you do at home, is what you do on your way to work, is what you do at school, is what you do with your family, is what you do when you go on holiday. This is about how you act, how you conduct yourself, your thoughts, your speech, and your actions. Because if you don't do that, then listening to sermons itself is not going to do much. Sunata, dharata, charata. Monks, listen. Listen carefully. Heed my advice. Bear what it is that I tell you. Remember what it is that I teach you. Now, go forth and act. Put what you've learned into action. Because if it was enough for you to just listen, the Buddha would have just said, Sunata, off you go. But he didn't say that, did he? If it was enough for you to just listen and bear, he would have said, Sunata, dharata, off you go. He didn't say that, did he? He said, Sunata, dharata, charata. Listen, bear, and act. Because it's only if you do all three of these things can you actually begin to see a change in your lives. Now, I know that from speaking to a lot of you, because I know, you know, you come back and speak to me at the end of sermons from time to time, you share your experiences with me. Sometimes you send through emails and things like that to the organizers, and they sometimes share what you send through to them with me. It's great to see that you are doing all these three things. And what I'm beginning to see over the last few weeks is I'm beginning to get quite a few questions about meditation. Because I understand that you listen, you bear, and now you want to act. And the conventional way of acting in the Buddha's dispensation, according to what most people think, is you listen to a sermon, now you go somewhere, sit under a tree or in your bedroom, wherever the case might be, you sit cross-legged, and now you start meditation. Because we're all so keen to do that. Because that's what we've known Buddhism to be. You know, when someone says Buddhism, what picture comes into your mind? Generally, it could be the Buddha. If not, it will be a monk who sat in the meditation posture. Isn't that the case? Because this is what we've learned Buddhism to be. To put into action what you've learned, we take today to be sitting cross-legged and starting meditation. Now, I've got nothing against that, by the way. It's a good thing to do, and for those of you who practice meditation will be able to share, I'm sure, with me experiences that you might have had, most of which will be quite positive, which is great. And you'll come and tell me, you know, Swami Mohan sir, I don't get angry like I used to, thanks to the meditation that I do. I'm able to control myself, unlike the way I used to be. When people come and shout at me, I'm able to control myself. When people come and they try and instigate raga, dvesha, moha in me, I'm able to control myself, which is great. But from time to time, people come and tell me, Swami Mohan sir, I'm beginning to see certain lights, flashes of light. I'm beginning to see various colors. You get the full spectrum, which is fascinating. It's fascinating to listen to you share those experiences. By the way, I'm not having a go at anybody. I'm just, you know, I'm being very forthright with you because I want to make sure that you travel the right path. I want to make sure that this investment of time that you do here is worthwhile. We all came to the conclusion that what we want to achieve is not become arahatun mahansis. We don't want to attain nibbana, we just want to see the truth. And you all agreed with me on that point. So if you all want to see the truth, do you have to meditate for that? Is meditation what you want to do, or is it seeing the truth that you want to do? Last week, a lady came and spoke with me at another venue, and she said, when I've been taking meditation lessons from several monks and I've been going through to several programs, and she says, so I'm beginning to see these flashes of light. What do I do now? I'm seeing yellow flashes of light from time to time, blue and sometimes, red sometimes. Now I'm not sure where do I go from here. So when you ask me that question, and if you are planning on asking me that question, I'll answer you right now and straight away. I don't know. If you come and ask me, I'm starting to see flashes of light, what do I do now? I'm sorry, I really don't know what you should do right now, if that is the case. If you're starting to see flashes of light, then you're going to have to go and speak to whoever gave you advice to practice that kind of meditation, which resulted in you seeing flashes of light. Because the only Dhamma that I have permission to speak, when I sit on this Dharmasana, when I sit on this chair, which belongs to the Lord Buddha, is what appears in the Tripitaka. What the Buddha taught in the Tripitaka. In my study of the Tripitaka, I have not come across any teaching where he speaks of flashes of light when you start practicing meditation. Yellow light, blue light, red light, green light. I've not come across that. Please understand, I'm not trying to ridicule any of you. That's not my intention. I mean, why do I have to bother doing that, coming all this way? What I'm here to do is to try and help you see the same Nibbana that I saw. If that's the same Nibbana that you want to see, the Nibbana that I'm heading towards, then you're welcome to come along. If you want a different type of Nibbana, sorry, I can't help you. Because the Nibbana that I'm traveling towards is the Nibbana that the Lord Buddha taught me, which appears in the Theravada Tripitaka. And it talks about Ragakyo, Deshakyo, Mohakyo, Nibbana. So that's the Nibbana I'm trying to head towards. That's the Nibbana that has become clear to me, and that's the Nibbana I'm heading towards. So I can only share my experience with you. I can't share with you what I learned, what I heard from somebody else, because that, I mean, how do I know if that's true? I can only share with you what I know is true for me. Because otherwise when you ask me a question, I'm going to get stuck. If all I'm giving you is hearsay, then you ask me a question, I'm going to be stuck. And I'll say, sorry, don't know. I'll have to go and speak to so and so. So I don't have that permission to, I don't have the permission to do that when I'm sat on this seat. Before you start practicing meditation, again, I emphasize, meditation is not a bad thing. It's a very good thing to do, provided you know what you're doing. If you know what you're doing, then meditation is great. See, when they hire soldiers to the army, right? What do they do for the first 6, 7, 8 months? Do they let them out into warfare? You know, go, here's a weapon, now go start shooting. Do they do that? No, because that would be crazy. Why would that be crazy? You wouldn't know your friends from your foes. You've got a weapon. It's loaded. What are you going to do now? Start firing. You pull the trigger and bullet after bullet, you're just shooting away. It doesn't matter who stood in front of you. You're just shooting. Friend, foe, whoever it may be. Sometimes you're the cause for your own destruction. You're killing people of your own team or you're from your own side. Getting into meditation without knowing what to do with meditation is very much like a soldier being armed with a weapon and now set forth without prior training, without prior proper training. What was the first discourse that the Lord Buddha gave when he attained Nibbana, after he attained Nibbana, after he became the Buddha? Dhammacakkappavattana Sutra. The discourse which set in forth the wheel of Dhamma, right? Idan dukkam arya saccham time bhikkave pubbe ananusutesu dhammesu chakkum udapadi jnanam udapadi panya udapadi vidya udapadi aloko udapadi. I have understood what the Dukkha Arya Satya is. Idan Dukkha Arya Satyam Parinyayanti Me Bhikkave Pubbe Ananusutesu Dhammesu Chakkum Udapadi Panya Udapadi Jnanam Udapadi Panya Udapadi Vidya Udapadi Aloko Udapadi. Parinyayanti Me Bhikkave, what does that mean? The singular term for that is Pirisinda Dakagan. Parinyayanti. Pirisinda Dakagan. Now I'm going to have to refer to few terms in Sinhala here because, well, it's for your own good. Our foreign listeners who don't speak a word of Sinhala, please forgive me, but I will give you the English translation as well. Piri Sindha Dakagan. What is Piri? Priya. Priya Bhava. That which looks pleasurable on the surface. Piri Sindha. What is Sindha? To penetrate. To look within. To penetrate. Dakagan. To see. So that which looks pleasurable on the surface, you need to penetrate through it and begin to look what lies underneath. So, idan dukkang arya satcham parinyayantime bhikkave pubbe ananusute sudammes. You've got to penetrate what looks pleasurable on the surface to be able to see dukkha arya satya. You see, until you're able to do that, the problem is, remember, how do we find happiness in our lives? We've talked about this for several weeks now. I said last week, remember, to achieve happiness, you need to have one quality with you, and that is desire. That is liking. So for as long, I mean, the only things you like, the only things you desire are the things that bring you pleasure. Where do you see this pleasure? On the surface. So if you're not able to penetrate that and look underneath, lift the bonnet, see under the covers, you're going to get attached to that. So he didn't say, start meditation. He didn't say, right, monks, you're all sat now. The five ascetics were sat in front of him. Everyone, go off and start meditation. That's not what he said. You see, if you want to see the same Nibbana that the Buddha did, you've got to follow his instruction. If you're aiming for a different kind of Nibbana, well, great, good luck. But if you want to head towards the same Nibbana that the Buddha gave us, then you have to follow his instruction. Otherwise, we're all trying to be Samma Sambuddhas ourselves. Again, good luck. I told you last week, that is not my aim. So I'm a student of the Buddha. I will do only what he said. I will follow his words to the letter. Because if only I do that, I mean, his teaching is complete. There is not one place where you could point and say, actually, you know, he didn't cover this bit. Or he got that bit wrong. Or he missed out this bit. He should have covered that. What was he thinking? There's not one bit in the Dhamma that is flawed. Everything is flawless. It's perfect. This is why it's timeless. The past, the present, or the future. No matter where you are on the path, if you follow the Buddha's teaching, you cannot go wrong, ladies and gentlemen. You cannot go wrong. If you follow his teaching to the letter, you cannot go wrong. Every time I went wrong in my life was because I strayed away from his teaching. I did the things that he said, don't do. I did the things that he said, bring you suffering. And I thought, what do you know? And guess where it ended me. So you have to be able to penetrate what looks pleasurable on the surface to see what's lying underneath. Until you're able to do that, you don't begin to realize the second noble truth. Idan dukkha samudayariya sattam. The cause for suffering. Samudaya Arya Satya. Remember, it's always Arya Satya, not just any old Satya. Again, we've covered this in the past. What is a truth? How is a truth different from an Arya truth or a noble truth? You know, these are not just words. These are not just words. Why are there certain things called truths and then there are certain things called noble truths? Again, you know, you have to refer back to the Sinhala terms or the Pali terms because they contain meaning. They contain, you know, you can come up with the etymology, how words are formed. And in the formation of these words, they contain deep meaning that you can't generally pick up from English terms. Because English wasn't a language that the Buddha chose to give his Dhamma. I mean, you know, if he wanted to, if he really wanted to, would he have not done that? You know, here's this Buddha, the Supreme Buddha, who is capable of doing absolutely anything that he wants. You know, he could have looked into the future, 2500 years into the future. English is going to be the international language of the world, so I might as well invent it now and start preaching the Dhamma in English for the benefit of many. But he didn't do that, because English doesn't convey the profound meaning that lies behind his doctrine. But that's okay. You know, if that is the medium that we have to use today, I'm not saying, you know, let's all stop these sermons and why don't you all go off and learn Sinhala and then come back and I'll start to do a sermon in Sinhala. When's that ever going to happen? That's not going to happen. And there are listeners who, you know, for them it's just not a possibility. Although I do know there are people. There was a gentleman who visited us from India about 2 months ago. He's actively, proactively trying to learn Sinhala, because he appreciates that the Buddha's doctrine, to fully understand, to fully grasp it, you either have to understand or learn Pali, or you have to speak Sinhala. So how fortunate do you guys think you are to have been born in Sri Lanka, to have been born in a land where Sinhala is the mother tongue, at least to be able to speak a few words if you're not fluent in Sinhala? You know, this is a gift that you must treasure. Treasure not by going around saying, hey, I'm a Sinhalese. And what's the point of that? This is not a racial question. Whether you're Sinhala or Tamil, that's not what this is about. This is about you've got yourself a valuable tool to understand the Buddha's doctrine. Something that you've only come across after many millions and trillions of births in samsara. So be grateful that your parents decided to teach you Sinhala. I know I'm taking a diversion here, but you know, parents, particularly for those parents who are abroad, maybe listening to these sermons in other countries, you know, it's easy for parents to come to the conclusion, you know, our children are now growing up in other countries, in foreign countries, you know, UK or Australia or Canada, you know, why do our children need to learn Sinhala? They're never going to go back to Sri Lanka, and even if they do, not being able to speak in Sinhala is usually earns a pat on the back, right? If you are not able to speak in Sinhala, Mama Sinhala Chutta Bae, Mama Sinhala Chutta Danno, Chutta Chutta Danno. I mean, he only left the country last year, comes back, and this is how he speaks. Because this is the mentality that we people have. Again, this is not me having a go, but you know what I want you to understand is the value of what you have. So please treasure that, and your children, teach them Sinhala. If that's the last thing you teach them Sinhala. I mean, learning Pali is great, but we don't have sermons in Pali. You know, when was the last time you went online and found a monk delivering a sermon in Pali? So this is why you have to make an effort to learn Sinhala if you can. So anyway, coming back to what we were talking. You know, the Buddha talks about the Dukkha Samudaya Arya Satya. Then he talks about the Dukkha Nirodha Arya Satya. Satchika Tabbanti Bhikkave Sakshat Karagati Yatui. What is to Sakshat Karagan? Again, that's a Sinhala term. Is to achieve. You have to achieve the eradication of suffering. And then finally he goes on and he says, Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada Arya Satyam Bhavita Tabbanti Me Bhikkave. Bhavita, not Bhavana. What, did he get it wrong? No. He says Bhavita, not Bhavana. Now, I know this is going to be quite controversial, because there will be people listening to this and there's going to be a flurry of emails or telephone calls, and people will probably want to come and shoot me at the monastery and say, what the hell are you talking about? This is what we've always known. This is what we've always done. No, meditation is what's going to help us achieve what we want to. which is to go towards Nibbana. Well, you know, last week I told you, I'm not here to debate. I don't have the time for that. I can only show you what I have learned from the Tripitaka, and that makes sense to me. But I don't just come and deliver what makes sense to me, because that would be wrong. Me wearing a robe, clad in robes and sitting on this, on the seat that belongs to the Buddha. I have to show you, I have to help you understand what it is that the Buddha taught. So he said bhavita, and what we do now is bhavana. It's not what's wrong in the posture, it's not the bodily action that's wrong. It's where your mind is. That's where the problem is. When we go to meditate, you know, if I ask you to see, I mean, here's a classic example. If I said, right, let's all take 5 minutes to meditate, and I said, off you go, what are you all going to do? You're all going to close your eyes. You're all probably going to bring your hands together, or arms together. If possible, you might sit down wherever you might be, cross-legged. Because this is the image that we have of meditation. Meditation has been given a wrong meaning. That's the problem here. I mean, it's not meditation that's been given a wrong meaning, because meditation existed long before the Buddha came into this world. What did the likes of Alara Kalam and Uddhaka Ramaputta do? What did Asita, the ascetic, who came to visit the young prince when he was born? You know, remember he came and cried at the ceremony where he came to bless this young child. Why did he cry? He cried because he was not going to be alive. He's not going to be around when this prince becomes a Buddha. But the same ascetic, where he went on holiday? He went to the Brahma worlds on holiday. From time to time when he wanted to take a break. That's where he went, to the Brahma worlds. So he had cultivated the jhanas to be able to do that. To go to the Brahma worlds. Neva sanya na sanya, which is the highest you can go in terms of developing jhanas, and the one after that is Nirodha Samapatti. So Nirodha Samapatti is something that only an arahant can do, where you stop the rising of the chittas. So chittas stop arising and passing away for the duration that you have, you are in that absorptive state of mind. So even the ascetic Asita was able to do that. But had he attained Nibbana? No, he hadn't attained Nibbana. He hadn't attained Nibbana because he didn't follow the path the Buddha had taught. Because, well, he wasn't around in the time of the previous Buddha. And the reason he cried was because he was not going to be around when this young prince was going to become a Buddha. So the Nibbana is only something that you can achieve by practicing what a Sammasambuddha teaches. If you find another way to achieve that, it's either not Nibbana, or you have just become a Sammasambuddha. It's only one of these two things. If you have found a way to attain Nibbana without following the teaching of a Sammasambuddha, either you have not, what you have attained is not Nibbana, or you have just become a Sammasambuddha. Or a Paccheka Buddha. These are the only three options. These are the only three things that could happen. One of these three. So when we get into this wanting to practice meditation, here's what we need to do. That lady, when she came and spoke with me last week, I had just concluded a sermon, and she came and asked me, you know, Venerable Sir, can you please give me a meditation object, which is a karmasthana. Can you give me a karmasthana for me to practice meditation? And so I said, well, I've been doing meditation for the last 3 hours. Did you not see me practice meditation? She said, no, I was late to arrive, so I didn't see you do that. No, I said, for the last 3 hours you were here, sat in front of me. Did you not see me do that? Oh no, sorry, I might have fallen asleep. No, you're still not getting what I'm telling you, are you? Did you not see me practicing meditation for the last 3 hours? I have just concluded a 3-hour sermon. Are you not getting what I'm trying to say? So she's looking at me dumbfounded. I said, when I was sat on that Dhamma seat, or when I was sat on the seat, the Dharmasana, I was practicing meditation. I was practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. Once you have attained Sammaditti, and we spoke about Sammaditti previously, once you have attained the first step, once you have achieved the first step of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is Sammaditti, you know what it is you need to do now. Someone who has entered the stream, which is why they call it a stream enterer. Once you've entered the stream, you're only going to flow one way. The water is only going to take you one way, and that is downstream. That is why we say a stream enterer ends at becoming an arahant, ends at completing this journey by becoming an arahant, by attaining enlightenment, whether you like it or not. You are going to become an arahant. So if you don't want to become an arahant, then make sure you don't become a sotapan. Sometimes there are people who come and tell me at the end of sermons, "Venerable sir, my wish, my aim is to become a Sammasambuddha." And I say, wow, what a great ambition that is. Just make sure that when you listen to sermons, you don't think too much about what it is I say. Why? But what if you become a sotapan? That's it. You're not going to be able to become a Sammasambuddha after that. Tell me. I mean, all of this is meritorious, of course. But as soon as you become a sotapanna, you will not wait for the next Supreme Buddha to come to become an arahant. You will become an arahant before the advent of the next Buddha. Before the Maitri Buddhajanan Mahanse comes in, you are all going to become arahants if you become a sotapanna in the era of the Gautama Sammasambuddha. If that's provided, we're talking about the human realm. Okay, there are anagamis and those beings in the Brahma worlds. So we're talking about the human world. But anyway, putting all that to a side, once you have stepped into this stream, once you have entered the Noble Eightfold Path, which is Sammaditti, see, in the Satcha Vibhanga Sutra, which is delivered by Venerable, the great elder Sariputta, he asks, Katamacha uso Sammaditti. Dukkha jnana. Now he says Dukkha Satya. Dukkha Arya Satya jnana. Dukkha Samudaya Arya Satya jnana. Dukkha Nirodha Arya Satya jnana. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada Arya Satya jnana. Ayam Uchchatavaso Sammaditti. So it's crystal clear to us what Sammaditti is. It's understanding, it's the comprehension of the Four Noble Truths. So once you have understood the Four Noble Truths, then you have, there's no question there, you have entered the Noble Eightfold Path. And that path only leads you one way. It's a one-way street. There's no going back and forth there. It's a one-way street. This stream, you know, again, this is why it's called a stream enterer. You're a sotapanna, you become a stream enterer. Once you've entered the stream, you're only going to flow in one direction. You're going to flow towards the ocean. All streams flow towards the ocean. And the ocean is Nibbana. But to get there, you must first become a sotapanna. It's like, I gave the example of the soldier in the army. I always say, you know, take a sniper. If you arm a sniper with a weapon and say, now go do your thing, he's just going to go and do his thing. He's going to load his weapon and he's going to start firing all over the place, causing harm to himself as well as other people. This is why you train a soldier first. One who has received that training, that initial training, one who is able to understand the Four Noble Truths, is someone who has been trained in the art of practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. Because, and therefore, when you attain that state, guess what? You no longer need to come and ask me for a meditation object. You no longer need to come and ask for a karmasthan, because you know what the problem is now. You know what the cause of the problem is now. You know what the how to eradicate the problem and the steps towards eradicating the problem. I'll give you an analogy. Say you've got a rash on your arm. And say you're dressed in long sleeves. Now, let's imagine you don't actually know you have a rash because you're dressed in long sleeve shirt. Okay, so you can't see what's going on. But you can feel an itch. Because you can feel an itch, what you do? The natural inclination is to do what? To scratch. So you start scratching. And when you scratch, after a little while, the itch goes away, right? And you think, oh, that's it. That's what I should do. That solves the problem. What? For how long? Not forever. A few minutes later, it comes back again. And then you think, ah, I know what I did last time. Surely it's going to work again. So what do you do again? You scratch. And you're going to do it again. And again. And again. One fine day, you're going to take off your shirt and you're going to look at your arm. And it's going to be a festering wound there. Why? Because every time it itched, what did you do? You scratched. Every time you scratched, you dug deeper into your wound. Not knowing what you were doing to yourself. Not knowing the harm you were doing to yourself. Because it felt like you were doing the right thing. You know, doing what feels right is not going to get us towards Nibbana. Well, let alone Nibbana. It's not going to help you heal your wound either. You've got to do the right thing, not what feels like the right thing. This is why you need the guidance of someone. You need the guidance of a Lord Buddha, for Sammasambuddha, or someone who has learned the Dhamma from him. This is why you need the association of a noble person, Arya, to become a Sotapanna yourself. Because until then, you know, again, think back into your own lives. I always tell you this, your labs are the best place to learn, your lives are the best labs to learn what you, to put what you learn into practice. That's where your theory becomes real for you. When a mother gives birth to a child, and if it's a stillbirth, okay, so the child's dead at birth, she's in tears, she's crying, she can't bring herself together, what do her relatives come and tell her? Hey, don't worry, you're still young, just have another child, then everything will be fine. So what have they just told her to do? Go through the same process again. So what if it happens a second time? Now she's suffering for the second time. You know, when you want to watch TV, when your minds... Remember, we talked about this for several weeks now, so I want you all to bring back all those things we talked about. I know it's been a week, and I know you've had lots of things to do in that week, but bring them all back into the present moment. Call back on your memory. If your memory can't do that right now, then it's pointless. You might as well just let go of your memory. Bring your memory. Put your memory to work. Bring it all back right now. You know, when your mind wants to watch TV, when your mind wants to see sights, what do people do? Hey, go and get a television. Why black and white? Get a color TV. You can see even brighter, even clearer, better pictures. Not just any old color TV, get a 4D or what they call a 4K, a 4K HD color TV. Then you can get a curved TV. You can get a 3D color TV. Because when your mind's wanting something, what the world does, what society does, what people in society does, is come and give you plasters to put on your wounds. They never heal the wound. They never heal the wound because they don't know how to. But not only that, remember I asked you once before, when does the proprietor of the Jayaratna funeral service happy? He's happy when you're happy or when you're sad? When you're sad. He's laughing, he's smiling when you're crying. And he's crying when you're laughing. This is how everyone in this world is. To make a living, they have to make a living out of somebody. And who is that somebody? You. whether, you know, it doesn't matter what it is they sell, whether it's a service or a product. You have to make, to make a living out of somebody, there has to be customers. You are the customer. And because we are the customer, what sellers or providers of products and services do is they try and pinpoint something that's wrong with you. You didn't know it was wrong with you all this time. You know, when you think about when people started wearing shoes. You know, people lived fine without shoes. You know, their feet got accustomed to walking on stones and rocks, and, you know, from time to time it might have caused a scratch or a wound somewhere, but, you know, that was okay. But after a while, someone came and invented shoes, and now everyone wants shoes. You know, where did the television come from? What do you think? You know, people were fine without televisions, weren't they? Think about the time of your friend, your grandparents or your great-grandparents. There was probably one television for the entire village. So before that television came into the village, didn't people get along fine with their lives? Actually, people got along even better because they had more time to speak with other people. They had time to converse with other people, to find out if they were okay, to visit relatives, to strengthen the bonds that they had in society. But along came the television. And how were the manufacturers of televisions able to introduce the television to you? They came and said, hey, wouldn't you love to see sights? You know, all these sights. You know, why are you just satisfied with the sights that you can see with your own eyes, with your two eyes right in front of you? What about stuff that happens in other countries? Wouldn't it be great if you could see those things? Wouldn't it be great if you could see under the waters in the oceans? Or what it's like in Mars? What it's like on the moon? Oh yeah, that's a lovely thought. I never thought of that. Well, now you do. And guess what? I've got just the thing for you, sir. What is it? Here's a television. You make that need, you instill that need in one person. Now one guy's got it. And what are we humans like? If the other guy's got it, I want it too. Even if it's a rash. If the other guy's got it, I want it too. So you want and go, you go and get another one of those. Now you've got one. When you've got one, the person next door wants one. And before long, if you have a TV in your home, then you are a respectable family. If you don't have a TV at home, then, you know, you're just a so-so. People don't respect you. People think you can't make ends meet. You know, think about the last time you went to buy furniture. A sofa. How many times do you actually sit on your sofa at home? Why did you have to get the grandest, the most fabulous sofa that was there in the furniture shop? I mean, all you do is you rest your bottom on the sofa. And even that you do maybe once a week. But you know, you couldn't just get any old sofa. You had to get the grandest, most fabulous sofa that they sold there. Why so? Well, guess what? Your next door neighbor has one. You build homes, 3 stories, 4 stories, 5 stories, 10 bedrooms. How many bedrooms can you sleep in? One. How many beds can you sleep on? One. How many showers can you take at one time? One. So why do you need 5 showers at home? Again, I'm not having a go at you, by the way. These were things I used to do. This is how I know you so well. Because I was just the same. You know, society instilled in my mind, to be a great person, you have to have more. You have to make more, to build more, to acquire more, to gather more. Because what they didn't tell me was, it's attachment that brings me suffering. The more things that they showed me, the more things I got attached to. The more things that they brought my way, the more things I thought, hey, another one, let me go and get one of those as well. So start with a black and white TV, then you go to a color TV, then you go to an HD TV, then you go to a curved TV, now you go to a 3D TV. Well, guess what? There's going to be another one soon. And then your curved TV is going to go out. That's going to go to your parents' home. And you're going to get a new one. and that's going to be some other kind of TV. Because, you know, that's how it works, right? Your parents get the stuff that you throw away. Because they're old-fashioned. We are new-fashioned. How do I know? So, society never shows you that it's attachment that brings you suffering. Why? Because for as long as you are blind to that truth, the world can make a living out of you. And this is how the world survives. The world continues to exist. So the Buddha comes along and says, it's attachment that brings you suffering. It's desire that brings you suffering. Parinyayanti me bhikkave. Pirisinda dakin. Look underneath the covers. Then you're going to see how what looks pleasurable, how what looks satisfactory on the surface, actually is a whole heap of suffering underneath. And as soon as you attach yourself to that, you are now subject to dukkha dukkha, sankara dukkha, viparinama dukkha. And we've covered some of this in the past. So blind to all this, what you do to find happiness in your life is you go and acquire more, you gain more, you build more. Last week, remember I asked you the question? You all went, well, most of you would have gone to Dhamma school, Dhammapasa. You will have listened to sermons. And what did the monks tell you? Let go, let go, let go. What did you really do? You collected, you gathered, you built. You did exactly what he said, don't do. You did exactly what the monks at your temple said, don't do. And then you come and ask, why is it I'm still suffering? So you have to be able to penetrate what looks pleasurable on the surface to see what lies underneath. When you're able to do these two things, ladies and gentlemen, now you understand what it is you need to do to eradicate this suffering. So going back to the analogy I gave you about the rash on your arm, you've been scratching it all along whenever you felt an itch. One fine day you take off your shirt and now you see this festering wound underneath. If someone comes and asks you, if someone came and asked you before you took off your shirt, when you feel a scratch or when you feel an itch, what is it that you're supposed to do? What are you going to say before you took off your shirt? What are you going to say? Scratch it. That's the advice you're going to give. Whenever you feel an itch, scratch it. I've done it and it works for me, so just keep doing it. But one day you take off this shirt. You take off the shirt and now you see this wound. It's a big wound that's on your arm. And you realize that it's become so big, it's gone so bad because you've scratched it every time you felt an itch. Now someone comes and asks you, hey, I'm feeling this itch. What do you think I'm supposed to do? Are you going to say, go ahead and scratch it? No, you're not going to say that anymore, are you? Now do you need someone to come and tell you again, hey, don't scratch yourself? No, because you know exactly that that is the wrong cure. That is the wrong way to go about it. That's not the right thing to do. Then you go and try and understand, how can I treat this wound? You go and look for a cream of some sort, some ointment, some kind of medication. Once you've got yourself the medication, once you understood what the cream is, and again for that you need to go see a doctor. You need the doctor to give you all four of these things. By the way, you need the doctor to tell you that this itch that you're feeling is really a wound underneath your shirt, so please take off your shirt and then you'll see the real cause. You don't know this by yourself. All you know is when it feels like it's itching, go ahead and scratch. That's what society told us. But a teacher, someone who's gone through the same experience, someone who felt that itch himself, and then took off his shirt and then found out, hey, I've got this big festering wound on my arm. Now what should I do? And then he went and tried all sorts of different medicines. He tried everything in the book. And when he found one medicine, he found this medicine cures my problem. And then from that point forwards, he goes on telling other people, he goes on teaching other people, hey, if it feels like you've got an itch, try this cream. It works. This is the cream that's going to help you.
Until you come across that teacher, you're going to keep scratching yourself. But one day you're going to take off this shirt, you're going to see that wound, and now your teacher is going to tell you, here's the cream you need that's going to heal that wound. Once you've been given that cream, what do you need to do next? Keep going back to the teacher? Do you have to keep going back to the doctor? No. What do you do now? You've got yourself the cream. Apply it. That is what meditation is. Once you've gotten yourself the medicine, application of that medicine is what meditation is. That's why he says, bhavita tabbanti me bhikkhave. Use it. Use it. Use what? The medicine. The Noble Eightfold Path. Use it. You see, again, people say, madum pilivet. Not this extreme, not the other extreme, in the middle. Don't drink too much, don't not drink at all, just drink a little bit. Is that madum pilivata? Or you think the Buddha would have said that? Hey monks, come here. You know this alcohol, don't take too much of it. Oh, don't not take it either, just take a little bit. You know, once in a while just take a few sips. That will be good for you. You think the Buddha would have said that? No. He doesn't talk about, you know, it's not the center line, it's not the center point. He talks about Majjhima Patipada. Majjhima is Madhya, medium. Patipada is Pratipada. It's the practice. You practice the medium. You practice the medium that's going to cure your problem. And the application of that medicine is practicing the medium. And that is the Noble Eightfold Path. So how can you start traversing the Noble Eightfold Path if you haven't arrived at Sammāditti? When Sammāditti is nothing but Dukkhe Jnana, Dukkha Samudhe Jnana, Dukkha Nirodha Jnana, Dukkha Nirodha Gāmini Patipadārya Jnana. For as long as you're blind to what it is that actually causes you suffering, how can you actually practice it? But once you understand the real problem, now you don't need a teacher after that. That's why a Sotapanna does not need a teacher. Once you are a Sotapanna, you don't need instruction. You don't need guidance. Because you now have the Dhamma. Dhammasaka, Dhamma Chakra starts turning inside you, in your mind. That's why his first discourse is the Dhamma Chakkappavattana Sutra. He set in motion this wheel of Dhamma. It's not just, you know, the meaning behind that is not just giving a dispensation that talks about the Four Noble Truths. What he speaks of there is, I want to give you this, you know, the problem, the cause for the problem, the eradication of the problem, and the path to eradication of that problem. Here are the four steps, the Four Noble Truths that you need to instill in yourself. This is like installing a software. You don't change the hardware. You know, you have the same bodies, but your software needs to be upgraded. So the Buddha comes and installs this software. You see, it's the 21st century, so you have to give examples from the 21st century. So you have to now go all install a software. You can't download it, by the way, off the internet. You need to download it off another Arya, either from the Samma Sambuddha or someone who has become an Arya by listening to his teaching. You can download it off of him or her, and that can either be a bhikkhu, a bhikkhuni, upasaka, upasika. It doesn't have to be a monk, it doesn't have to be a nun, it can be a lay person. There are plenty of lay people, and there'll be people among you, friends who preach the Dhamma. There may be classes that they do. Again, I have, they know, please don't take it the wrong way. You know, go along to these classes. But make sure that you're trying to cure the right problem. And it's always check yourself against this path. Raga ke, desha ke, moha ke, nibbana. Nothing else is going to be nibbana. If you're finding something else is nibbana, if you're thinking flashes of light is nibbana, then that's not the nibbana that the Buddha taught. So once you start this meditation, after you have become a Sotapanna, like I said, I explained to that lady, for 3 hours I was sat on this seat, meditating. You don't have to be in a cross-legged posture to practice meditation. You can be walking, you can be standing, you can be sitting, you can be lying on the bed, you can be showering, you can be gardening, you can be cooking, you can be cleaning, you can be washing your car, you can be washing your dog. You can do any of these things and yet be meditating. Because what you're doing when you're meditating is aptly applying that medicine. It's the application of medicine. Now, yes, it helps if you're sat somewhere where there are no disturbances, because then, you know, you don't have the, you know, people don't come and, hey, excuse me, Dad, I've got this thing you need to sign for me. Or, excuse me, Mother, what's for lunch? Right? You don't have those interferences. You don't have the disruption. There, in those circumstances, yes, you know, finding some kind of retreat, going on a retreat even, you know, being a recluse helps. But you can do that 24/7. Anytime you're not asleep, you can be meditating. So each and every one of you, you're meditating right now. If you've got your eyes open, if your ears are wide open, wide awake, and if you're asleep, then I don't think you're meditating right now. But if you're paying attention to what it is I'm saying, if these words you're grasping, you're taking in, you're applying into your lives, and it's doing the job of raga ke, desha ke, moha ke. What is raga ke, desha ke, moha ke? Shay karano is to eradicate. Raga, desha, moha. Because it's raga, dvesha, moha that are the defilements that keep us from Nibbana. Once you've eradicated raga, dvesha, moha, you are an arahant. That's it. Full stop. So if these are the defilements that stop you, that keep you from Nibbana, then that's where you need to apply your medicine. So, when you, you know, if say someone, you know, a very popular form of medicine, meditation even, is breathing meditation. So you sit somewhere in a comfortable posture, you close your eyes, you take a short breath in and a short breath out. Then you take a medium breath in and a medium breath out. Then you take a long breath in and a long breath out. And then generally, I mean, I've been to these lessons classes myself, so I know. Sometimes what they say is after a little while you're going to start feeling this air that you breathe, you're gonna feel sensations on the top part of your lip. And then after a while it's gonna be your nostrils. After a little while it's gonna be the top of your nose. After a little while it's gonna be your forehead. And by the time it gets there, then you're a sotapanna. And then when it hits the top of your head, then now you're a sakurdagami. At the back of your head you are an anagami. The question I have is, well, where does it have to hit before I become an arahant? What, my bottom? Where does the Buddha say it? Where does the Buddha give this kind of description? I'm informed by people that I speak with that there are places where they give certificates out to people. You are now a sotapanna. We certify that you are a sotapanna. Even Venerable Sariputta couldn't do that. How is it that people nowadays are able to do that? What God-given power do people possess these days to be able to certify someone else's noble attainments? Only the Buddha can do that. Only the Buddha has this faculty called the Indriya Paro Pariyatanyana, to be able to penetrate through one's mind and be able to see how much raga, dvesha, moha they have. And where it's come down to zero, 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 he says, now you're an arahant. And he looks at the Dasa Sanyojana. How far have you remove these defilements, these cankers? If you remove rakkha, iriti, vichikicca, silabada, paramasa, he says you are a sotapanna. But how can someone else give me that certificate? The reason I'm sharing this with you is please don't fall for these traps. People do this kind of thing. And sometimes they charge you a fee for it. I don't know where this kind of Buddhism comes from. Where in the Tripitaka does it say you can do that? You can judge someone else's noble attainment. I mean, how can, you know, you go to a teacher, you learn something from him. Say it's calculus. You go to a teacher, you learn calculus from the teacher. You ask the teacher, do I now understand calculus? How can the teacher give you an answer to that question. He's going to say, how do I know? I've taught you what I know. Only you will know whether you know it or not. By the way, here are some examples, or here are some exercises. Go and do them. And if you can solve all these problems, then more than likely you've understood it, you've grasped it. So that's something only you know. Either you know or the Samma Sambuddha knows. So recently there was an email that came through and someone asking, how can I tell for certain if I've become a Sotapanna? Well, what you shouldn't do is go to one of these classes and ask them. Because they'll charge you a fee for it. Depending on how much you pay them, then you'll either be a Sotapanna, Sakrudagami, Anagami, and sometimes even Arahats. There's a fee for each, apparently. I think it's 1,500 rupees and you're a Sotapanna. If you can afford like 5,000, then you're a Sakrudagami. 15,000, you're an Anagami. If you can afford 25,000, you're an Arahat. Job done. That's a great idea for business. Sorry. Don't fall for these traps. Don't fall for this. Make use of the Tripitaka. Study the Tripitaka, or at least go along to sermons and listen to people who study the Tripitaka on your behalf and give those sermons to you. Ragakya, Deshakya, Mohakya is the only measure for you to see where, if you are on the track. Nothing else. Absolutely nothing else. Now, sometimes people of course ask me, and it's a very valid question. You see, so Venerable Sir, you say don't start meditating until you become a Sotapanna. So I need to know if I'm a Sotapanna. Otherwise, how do I start meditating? I mean, how do I know when it is that I need to start meditating? And I have the perfect answer for that question, because the Buddha has given the answer to that question 2,500 years ago. One person went and asked him, Venerable Sir, Lord Buddha, what is it that a Pratakjana, a mundane worldly person, needs to do to become a Sotapanna? And he said, practice Anicca Dukkhanat. What is Anicca Dukkhanat? This is the reality. It's the truth. In a future sermon, actually, you know what? I think now that we have a growing listener base who come along to these sermons, I think in one of the future sermons we'll detail, because we did this in one of the previous sermons, but I think it's probably time again to revisit that topic. To give in full detail what anicca is, what dukkha is, what anatta is. And you know, clearly we've been practicing the path ourselves, so what you understand today as anicca dukkha anatta, you know, after you've been practicing the Dhamma for another 10 years, your understanding of the anicca dukkha anatta becomes even greater. This is why the Buddha says, to become a Sotapanna, all you need to do is practice anicca dukkha anatta. In fact, he says, listen to a sermon in which you are taught anicca dukkha anatta. Then he asks the question, what does the Sotapanna have to do to become a Sakrudagami? And he says, practice anicca dukkha anatta. So what does the Sakrudagami have to do to become an Anagami? Guess what he says? Practice anicca dukkha anatta. So what is the Sakrudagami or Anagami needs to do to become an Arahat? Practice anicca dukkha anatta. What does an Arahatu Mahansi have to do? What does he say? Practice anicca dukkha anatta. Not because there's still further, you know, for him to proceed. For there's more that he needs to do. But he says for his own benefit, for, you know, to be able to attain samadhi. Practice anicca dukkha anatta. This is the instruction that he gives an Arahatu Mahansi. So thankfully, we really don't need to know where we are on the path. Right? Because wherever you are on the path, there's only one thing you need to do. That is to practice anicca dukkha anatta. So whether you are a Pratakjana, whether you are a Sotapanna, whether you are a Sakrudagami, whether you are an Anagami, or whether you are an Arahat, there are times even in the time of the Buddha, there have been men and women who have not known that they have attained the state of Arahat. On one occasion, I can't recall the name right now, there was a nun who goes and asks Venerable Ananda, you know, my eyes are fully functioning, I can see, but I have no desire to see. I have no desire for sights. My ears are fully functioning and I can hear quite well. But I have no desire to go and get sounds and listen to sounds. She goes on about all her five organs. And he says, you know, I have a tongue, I can taste, but I have no special desire to go and taste. What kind of state is this? What kind of mental state is this? And Venerable Ananda says, I really don't know. I need to go and ask the Buddha. So he goes and asks the Buddha, and the Buddha says, what she has attained is the state of arahanthood. She is an arahant. So even Venerable Ananda couldn't ask that question, and yet today people give certificates. You are a Sotapa, you are a Sakudana, you are an Anagam, you are an Arahant. You see, the reason that a lot of people fall into this trap is because, you know, you're all good people, and there's no question about that. Because the reason you're all here today is because you want to make a change in your lives. You want to do something good with your lives. You begin to understand that this pointless existence I've been doing for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, and it's not gotten me anywhere. All I've done is built and acquired and grasped on and hanged on to things, hung on to things, and ultimately I was looking for happiness, but I have not found that happiness. Yes, I donate things, I give away to poor people, but still, when problems come my way, I begin to suffer. I cry and I get angry. Surely there's something that I still haven't tried out. So you want to make a change in your lives to find inner peace. And in seeking that inner peace, you know, when you have that anxiety in you, again, it's a pilima, right? That's the truth. Why? Remember we talked about how pleasure is always something that is pleasurable because you're in agony, you're in anxiety, you're in pain beforehand. Right? Like putting out your hunger. Food only brings you pleasure because you're hungry prior to that. A drink can only bring you pleasure because you're feeling thirsty before that. Going to the toilet can bring you pleasure only because you want to go to the toilet before that. So it's always releasing yourself from stress, anxiety and pain that brings you happiness. Likewise, when you begin to analyze your lives and you think, hang on a second, I've been doing all these things in my life trying to find happiness. And yet today I'm not happy, I'm not fully satisfied, I'm not fulfilled with my life. What do I have to do? Then you go looking for cures for your problem. And then there's going to be an army of people who are going to come running to you and say, hey, I've got the answer, I've got the perfect answer to your problem. Among them are going to be travel operators, holiday operators, right? That's what people do. Among them are going to be restaurant owners. Among them are going to be leisure park owners. Among them are going to be film producers, directors. Everyone has something to offer you to give you a sense of relief from the pain, the unsatisfaction, this agony that you're in. And among them, the worst kind of all are people that are going to come and sell you Nibbana on a piece of paper. They're going to sell you Sotapanna. They're going to sell you Sakurdagami. They're going to sell you Anagami. They're going to sell you Arahat on a sheet of paper and go, here you go, I hereby declare you an Arahat. There are people who come to our monastery who have fallen into this trap, I tell you. The problem is they come and then they speak to us and now they start debating with us. Why? They want to prove to us that they are in a higher state of mind than we are. They come to debate with us. And I have no problem with that. Not because I like to go debating. What do I do when people come and start debating with me? Yes, you're right and I'm wrong. Thank you very much. That's what I do. I don't have time to debate with people. I've got a bigger problem to solve. When people come and start debating. I mean, you know, people ask questions for the sake of understanding, for the sake of clarifying doubts, for the sake of their benefit, then that's perfectly fine. I've got all the time in the world. Like I said, the reason I came all this way, even in the state that I'm in today, is because, you know, I know you are looking for that, to redeem yourself from samsara. But I'm not going to go into an audience where people are just coming there for a debate. I have no interest in doing that. There may be other people who are interested, but not me, because I haven't got the time for that. But unfortunately, there are people who do come to our monastery and they come and speak to us, you know, Venerable Sir, I'd like to have a chat with you. What is it about? What, do you have a question? No, but if you have a question, ask me. And then they start throwing curveballs. What do you think about this? And then it takes me a little moment, but after a very short while I realize what game they are playing at. And then what do? I surrender. I say, oh my goodness, yes. Your knowledge is beyond my... I can't even comprehend how developed you are. You know, long may your journey prosper. Long may you prosper. Long may you be able to disseminate this Dhamma to other people. Thank you for taking the time to come and share that with me. Next time, before you come, please call, so I can make sure I'm not at the monastery. So, when we feel like we want to meditate, and the reason I wanted to touch this topic today, because I think we've only got till 5 this afternoon, there's another sermon off straight after this. I wanted to give you something that's really practical, because I know, given looking at the questions that we get day in, day out, there are a lot of people now wanting to practice meditation. And that's perfectly fine. But so here's what you need to do if you want to meditate. Listen to a sermon. Whether that's a single sermon, whether that's an English sermon, and if you speak another language, whether it's a Tamil sermon, whether it's a Russian sermon, provided that sermon talks about raga ke, desha ke, moha ke, and it gives you instructions on how to achieve that, please go ahead and listen to that sermon. That's perfectly fine. And when you're not listening to a sermon, then what do you need to do? Whatever you've learned, whatever you've understood from that sermon, apply it into your lives. So whether you're sat cross-legged, whether you're walking up and down, whether you're lying on your bed having trouble falling asleep, you know, think about something that you learned in a sermon. Dukkha are satya. Tanhai jayati soko. How is that true in my life? Now start applying it into your lives. Think about all the times when you had to suffer, when there was a tear in your eye. Those times when you had a tear in your eye, was that not because of tanhai jayati soko? Think. Analyze. Apply. And when you do so, it becomes real, it becomes true for you. And one day it's just going to click. And that click is going to happen when you're in the middle of a sermon. It's not going to happen when you're practicing meditation by yourself. It could be when you're listening to a sermon with your earphones on, or it could be when you're listening to a sermon, a live sermon like this. One day it's going to click. When that click happens, you're not going to hear a noise, by the way. It's just going to click in a way that you know, right, I've got it. It's perfectly true to me. It's perfectly clear to me now. Every time I've found happiness in my life, it's only because I've been in a state of agony, in a state of pain, in a state of suffering beforehand, and that happiness was a relief from that pain. And you're also going to understand, all you're going to understand is the Four Noble Truths. That's all it is. Because that clicking is you falling into the Noble Eightfold Path. That clicking is you entering the stream. That clicking is you becoming a Sotapanna. When you begin to understand the first noble truth of suffering, when you realize that every grain of sand, every person, every object, the stars, the planets, the galaxies, the universe, no matter how far you go, how wide you go, wherever you travel, around the globe, anything and everything that you find, if you attach yourself to it, it's going to leave you with nothing but suffering. When that becomes crystal clear, no matter whoever comes and debates with you, you're not willing to waver. Even if the Buddha came and said, I got it wrong, you're still able to go, sorry Buddha, you've got it wrong, I got it right this time. Attachment brings me suffering, not because you say so, but because it's perfectly clear to me. It's perfect understanding. When that happens, asare sara matina, sare cha sara dasina, te sarang nadi gacchanti, micha sankappa gochara. This is a Buddha's discourse. He gives in the Dhammapada. When you see something that is asara, something that is essenceless, as being full of essence, asare sara matina, sare cha sara dasina, something that is, that something where there is no essence, no happiness to be found, no pleasure to be found, you think actually there is pleasure, there is happiness to be found. If that is the case with you, te sarang nadi gacchanti, you're not able to tell that which is right from wrong. You're not able to distinguish things that are of essence versus the things that are essenceless. Sara and asara, anatta and atta. If that is your state of mind, then what you are, what the condition that you're in is micha sankappa. What precedes micha sankappa? Micha ditti. Samma ditti, samma sankappa. So, micha ditti, micha sankappa. So, if you are in micha sankappa, if your state of mind is that of micha sankappa, whereby you are able to see things as being essenceful, full of essence, full of meaning, full of happiness, full of satisfaction, no matter what that thing is, whether that's in the karma worlds, the rupa worlds, or the arupa worlds. If you find that, if you feel that, hey, actually, you know what, this thing brings me happiness, no matter what the monk says, no matter what the Buddha says, the more I have of this, the more happiness I'm going to get. That could be money, that could be wealth, that could be gold, that could be children, that could be houses, property, cars, women, whatever the case may be. Having more of that is only going to bring me happiness. If you still feel that way, then you are in micha sankappa. If that is your state of mind, what precedes micha sankappa is micha ditti. So without a question of a doubt, you are still in micha ditti. And if you are still in micha ditti, then your understanding is dukkhe ajnana, dukkha samude ajnana, dukkha nirodha ajnanam, dukkha nirodha gamini patipadaya ajnana. Therefore, you are not yet a sotapanna. See, isn't that how you can check for yourself whether you're a sotapanna or not? I mean, the Buddha gives it crystal, I mean, he makes it so simple for us. Once you get into samma ditti, then samma sankappa automatically falls into place. Avihinsa sankappo, nekkamma sankappo, avyapada sankappo, ayang uchchatavaso samma sankappo. This is not Sinhala, by the way, this is Pali. Pali from the Tripitaka. For our listeners who sometimes complain that we make use of Sinhala when we deliver sermons. So this is not Sinhala, by the way, this is pure Pali from the Tripitaka. This is the Buddha's words. In fact, it's venerable, the great elder Sariputta's words, because it's from the Satcha Vibhanga Sutra. So he talks about, you know, if you have thoughts of nekkamma. What is nekkamma? Naishkamma. Letting go. When you see something, you want to attach yourself to it. Is that how you still feel about objects? Whether they are in the material world, whether they are in the rupa worlds, or whether they are in the arupa worlds. If you feel like you want to attach yourself to it, if you feel like you want to get more of it, then your thoughts are not based in nekkamma. You want more, you want to build more, you want to acquire more. Avihinsa sankappa. What is vihinsa? To want to harm, to want to hurt. If you're feeling like you want to hurt someone, to hurt something, you want to destroy something, for the sake of wanting to get what is his, you know, for the sake of wanting to acquire what you desire. For the sake of wanting to acquire what you desire, if you feel like it's worth hurting somebody else, killing somebody else, damaging someone else's property, then you are still in Michcha Sankappa. That is your state of mind. Avyapada Sankappa. If you still have thoughts of anger, thoughts of hatred, when someone comes and shouts at you, if you feel that anger burning inside of you, if you feel like you want to fight back, then those are feelings of Michcha Sankappa, thoughts of Michcha Sankappa. So if you are still in Michcha Sankappa, then you don't need to go further. Just go one step back. What is the result of Michcha Sankappa? Sorry, what precedes Michcha Sankappa? Michcha Ditti. So if you still feel those thoughts of Michcha Sankappa, then you are still in Michcha Ditti. Now, let me clarify one point here though. The understanding of a Sotapanna is only an understanding and nothing else. It's just an understanding of the Four Noble Truths. It's like you open the door and it's time to walk the path, but you haven't yet started to walk the path. You open the door and the path lays straight and clear in front of you. You know where it's going to lead, you know how to travel the path, but you still haven't started walking the path. Because the moment you set that first step on that path, what are you now? On the path to becoming a Sakrudaga. You have gone beyond the state of Sotapanna and now you are on the path to becoming a Sakrudaga. Once you travel a certain distance on that path, now you attain the fruit of becoming a Sakrudaga. But so therefore, please don't try to judge a Sotapanna by the way they act, by the way they speak, by the way they conduct themselves, because that's not something that we can judge, because all they have is an understanding. However, having said that, if you hear of someone who has killed their mother, then you can be absolutely guaranteed that that person is not a Sotapanna. If you hear that someone has killed their father, matricide and patricide, if you hear of that, then you can be absolutely guaranteed that that person is not a Sotapanna. If you hear that someone has killed an Arahant, or if you see someone doing that, you can be absolutely guaranteed that that person is not a Sotapanna. If you hear of a monk who has performed the act of schism, Sanghabhedha, which can only be done by a group of monks who have received higher ordination, Upasampada, if you hear of monks who have conducted themselves in that way, you can be absolutely guaranteed that they have not attained the state of Sotapanna. But, you know, as lay people, then that's generally not something that you are able to gauge. In either case, you know, why do we need to bother if someone else is a Sotapanna? We don't have the time for that, do we? We don't have the time for that. Remember I told you last week about the tsunamis? How we are stuck in the middle of all these tsunamis that are coming our way relentlessly. What are these four tsunamis? Remember? What are they? Jati, Jara, Vyadi, Marana. Death, disease, decay, and birth. Four tsunamis coming our way relentlessly, not giving up. It's going to destroy you. The first tsunami that hits you is going to destroy you. Like I said, last week was an eye-opener for me. Last week, I reflected a lot on the fact that I'm still stuck in this tsunami. Waves came crashing on me. Vyadi tsunami came crashing at me. Illness, disease, ailment. And then I began to ponder, you know, what is it that I need to do with my life? Yeah, you know, I started to ask myself questions. You know, I go around, we deliver sermons. When I deliver a sermon, does that bring mana inside of me? Do I feel ego growing inside of me? When people come and worship in front of me, does that develop and cultivate ego inside of me? Because if it does that to me, then I'm walking the wrong path. I'm going completely the wrong direction. This is why we have to be very careful. When you're a respected person in society, and particularly now that you practice the Dhamma, you're going to have friends who will come and respect you. You know, if you meet the people that are here today, if they have become friends outside these circles, then people are going to respect you. When you give someone the gift of Dhamma, they're going to be eternally grateful for that. They may come and worship you. They'll come and sing praises of you. Then you have to be very careful. Are you going to jump into that pit of mana, ego? It's very easy to do, particularly as monks. So I have to be very careful. I'm not an arahat, monk. I'm not an arahat. For as long as I'm not an arahat, I have raga, dvesha, moha inside of me, in my mind. These defilements I battle with every day. And so I have to be careful. You are not responsible for my raga, dvesha, moha. I am responsible for my raga, dvesha, moha. The answer to that is not asking you all, hey, stop worshipping me. That's not the answer. The answer to that is for me to understand who you are worshipping is not me. When you worship, you are worshipping because you see a robe clad around my body. This robe is for you a sign, a representation of the most venerable Sariputta, the most venerable Moggalla, the great elder Mahakashyapa, not me. Who am I? I'm still subject to disease. I'm still subject to decay. I'm still subject to death. And I'm still subject to rebirth. I have not won anything yet. I'm still fighting this battle. I'm still in a war. So there's no way you could be worshipping someone like me. It's not me that you worship. You worship this robe. You worship who comes into your mind when you see the robe. So this is what I remind myself. And likewise, you all need to do the same. This is why I give you my practical examples from my life. So you'll have to do the same in your lives. Be careful. For as long as Klesha Mara, remember, I think there was one of the kids who brought a question a couple of weeks ago. He was asking about Mara. Who should we worry about? Vasavatti Mara or Klesha Mara? And I explained it was Klesha Mara that we need to be careful from. We need to worry about. Vasavatti Mara has no business with us. Oh, don't worry about him. He picks his fights with Sammasambuddhas, Bodhisattvas. Those who want to attain supreme enlightenment, supreme Buddhahood. People like me, small fry, doesn't care one bit. But Klesha Mara, all over the place. Before we conclude, there's something I want to leave you with. Because this is something that, you know, as I was on my bed for most of last week, something I was reflecting on. And while this is very true for me as a monk, I would like to invite you to reflect on where this might be true for you as well, because I guarantee there will be examples that you can relate to. I still haven't had the opportunity to share this with the other monks in the monastery, and I will make it a point to do so, because I think it's an important lesson for us all. So you're the first to hear this. Imagine a family. There's a father, a mother, children. This family it's not easy for them to make ends meet. The parents work hard. They work very hard because they're a very poor family. Although the father leaves home at 4 o'clock in the morning, and his job is that of a laborer, he works very long hours, toiling every day, being subject to abuse from other people, He goes through all this because he wants to feed his family. He realizes that if it was just me and my wife or just myself, I wouldn't have to go through all this. But when they had kids, this couple, when they had kids, they brought these kids into this world, they decided we're going to give these kids the best upbringing that we can. So this father, he works very hard, extremely hard. But despite all this effort, he's still not able to save their kids' hunger. He's not still able to put a roof over their heads. When the kids are ill, when they have griping stomach aches, the father is not able to treat them properly. Sometimes he's able to take them to the village doctor, but even then, sometimes he's not even able to pay the fee. So he does that on loan. And dinner for them is sometimes a slice of bread for all three kids. So one day, the father decides, I'm sick and tired of doing this. I have a responsibility to these kids. This is my family and I have to give them a good upbringing. So he decides to leave his beloved family behind. And he goes to seek employment to faraway lands. His beloved wife and his children. Children and a family that he decided when he got together as a family, he thought, I'm never going to leave you. I'm always going to be by your side. Because children, you are the apple of my eye. That's what he promised them. But yet he realizes, staying with my children is not the answer to this problem, so I have to go away. So even though it hurts him deeply, even though it tugs at his heartstrings, he goes away. He travels to faraway lands where he struggles to find work. But ultimately he does, again as a laborer. Because it's a faraway land and nobody knows him, they don't have any problems with making him work extra hard. They make this man pull carts, carry heavy weights, all day long, up and down. They make him work really, really hard. Sometimes his employers abuse him through word as well as body. Sometimes they hit him, they spank him, they whip him, and over time he gathers wounds on his body. His skin has now dried up because any food that he gets, he saves for his children. Any money that he earns, he just spends the very little that he needs to keep him going so he can work another day and nothing else. He's very thrifty. He saves every penny, every cent that he can muster. After many years, 10, 15 years after he has left, he returns to his family. On returning to his family, he finds his children have grown up, his wife has aged, and yet he's very emotional because after a very long time he's getting to see his children. He goes running to his children. He gets him to sit down. And the mother comes and sits by the children and says, children, listen to me. Although you were very young when your father left 10, 15 years ago, and you didn't even know him properly then, your father has worked very hard for you. Go and see when he takes off his shirt. You will see whip marks on his body. People shouted at him. People yelled at him, scolded him. They cracked the whip at him. They made him toil. They made him work hard. He's only had very little sleep and very little food. He was a big, strong man back then. That's the man I got married to. But today, he's shriveled. He's very thin, he's very faint, he's very weak. But still, I'm sure he has gifts for you, so go and ask him for them. The children go to the father, and the father, now very happy to see his children, starts giving him whatever he's brought with him. He gives him foods. He gives him drink. He gives the children drink. Clothes. Toys. And all these gifts that he's worked so hard together to collect. When I was on that bed all last week, sick, and at the mercy of the other monks who were at the monastery, who brought me medicines, who brought me food to my bed, who washed my robes for me, I began to think, all these things that I am able to enjoy today, this robe, every grain of sand that lies under my feet in the monastery, every tree that I take shelter from, every roof that I sit under to take shelter from, every grain of rice that I eat, is because my father took the pain to leave us all behind, travel to faraway lands, and he worked very, very hard. He toiled all day and night. People cracked the whip at him. He sacrificed eyes, ears, blood, and sweat for me. And that father is the Sammasambuddha. When I feel like, when I prepare to eat, when I see food in my alms bowl, every grain of rice to me is 10 years of his sacrifice. We know how long he sacrificed in samsara to become a Sammasambuddha. When at the feet of Lord Buddha Deepankara, he could fully well, with no problem, have become an arahant. He jumped into samsara. He sacrificed his well-being for our benefit. He said, no, I don't want to attain Nibbana by myself. I want to give the gift of Nibbana to all worldly beings. And in making that resolute, he traveled to faraway lands. And as you will have read in the Jataka tales, the Jataka stories, the things that he did to attain the supreme Buddhahood, donating eyes, blood, tears, parts of his body. When I see grains of rice in my alms bowl, I feel like he's chopping a part of his body and offering it to me to eat. When someone brings me medicine and says, Swami Mahansar, this is for your ailment, to me that feels like he's draining blood from his body and saying, here, have it. When that is the case, can I complain about what it is that I have for lunch today? When those kids, having been instructed by their mother how hard their father has toiled and struggled to earn what it is that the father has to share, to give to those children, can those kids come back to their father and say, hey father, why did you bring me this? You should have brought me that instead. I don't like these toys. You should have brought me the other toy instead. I don't like the color of the shirt that you've just given me. Can I have another one instead? Would the kids ever do that? Not if they properly understand the sacrifice that their father did for them. Likewise, my father, the Gautama Sammasambuddha Dhyana Mahansa, his sacrifice was limitless. Sara Asankhya Kalpa Lakshya. For incalculable eons, he sacrificed himself to feed me, to robe me, to give me shelter, to give me medicine. Had he sacrificed 1 year less, I doubt we would even have this Buddhism today. This temple might not be here had he sacrificed 1 minute less. Don't you think so? Isn't the reason you're a Buddhist today because of his sacrifice? Isn't the reason you get to listen to the Dhamma because of his sacrifice? Because he dedicated and committed himself, because he gave eyes, blood, parts of his body for our salvation, for our liberation. Had he not sacrificed just 1 minute less, had he sacrificed 1 minute less, I doubt any of us would be here today, right now. Just 1 minute less. This is why we must always, always realize and appreciate how much our Father did for us. Every minute that he sacrificed for us, for you, for me. Because he was able to attain arahatvam and end this painful birth, rebirth process in samsara at the feet of Lord Buddha Deepankara. That we all know fully well. And yet he jumped into the fire of samsara, knowing fully well that there's going to be no end of this suffering. Are you prepared? Let me ask you the question. Are you prepared right now to go through that process for the liberation of any random person in this, under this shelter? I'm not. My patience knows its bounds. My compassion has bounds, has limits. The amount I'm willing to sacrifice has bounds, has limits. But my Father, boundless, limitless. So, I appeal to you all. Open your eyes. Realize how fortunate you all are. Today we all call ourselves Buddhists. What did the Buddha sacrifice himself for? Is it just to call ourselves Buddhists? Just to give ourselves a label? Or was there something more profound, something greater that he wanted us to achieve? Have you started on that journey yet? If not, when are you going to start that journey? The reason you're a Buddhist today is because the Lord Buddha sacrificed himself. Remember that. Because he sacrificed his children. Because he sacrificed his body, his blood, his sweat, his tears. You are all Buddhists today. If not for him, we would all be just like wild animals, jumping at each other, killing at the first opportunity that we get, stealing, lying, backstabbing, and paving a path to the four hells. Thanks to him, we still have an opportunity to achieve what it is that we need to do as Buddhists. So finally, again, I appeal to you. Think about what you have today. What you have, this gift, this privilege that we all say, hey, I'm a Buddhist. Think about what you say when you put your arm up and say, I'm a Buddhist. It's not just a label. It's not just a religion. It's not just a philosophy. It's who you are. It's what you do with the Buddha's teaching. If you don't do that, then you're just spitting in the face of the Lord Buddha. That is what you're doing. Having listened to this Dhamma, having had the privilege, having had the opportunity to take this Dhamma, Dhamma that leads you to Nibbana, if you still don't make use of it, I'm sorry to say, you might as well spit at him in the face. So I know you don't want to do that. Therefore, make use of this precious life that you have. Every moment, every second that ticks away, every moment that passes by is a moment that will never come back to you. Never. Whether you're 15 or 30, 45 or 50, it doesn't matter. You don't know when your last moment alive is going to be. You don't know when you're going to shed your last breath. At this moment in time, you have the Buddha's Dhamma. At this moment in time, I cannot vouch that 5 minutes from now, you will still have it. You can't either. So if you can't, if now is the only moment that you can take with any kind of certainty, what is it that you have to do then? The answer should be obvious. When he has sacrificed so much for me, it doesn't matter if someone comes and chops my arms and limbs off. If my heart's still beating, if my lungs can still keep me alive, I will be here. Even if there's just one of you who wants to listen to the sermon. When you bring your arms together to worship the Buddha, it's not just a statue you're worshipping. It's not just any old man you're worshipping. This is someone who has sacrificed his life over many, many, many countless eons for you to be born a human today. For you to be born and to have received the Dhamma today. For you to have the path to liberate yourselves from samsara. Think about that. Always reflect on that truth. And then, when you say, Natthi me saranang anyam, Buddho me saranang varam, that now has meaning. Otherwise, it's just a set of words. When you understand how much he did for you, and then you recite, Natthi me saranang anyam, Dhammo me saranang varam, now you understand it's because of him that you have this Dhamma today. Natthi me saranang anyam, Sangho me saranang varam, now you understand. It's because of the great elders like Sariputta Moggallana, Mahakashyapa, Bhadrakachayana, these arahat monks and nuns who sacrificed their lives and did everything that they could so today you could have this Dhamma. It's thanks to them that we have what we have today. So when you bring your arms together to worship the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, I want you all to reflect on that. Otherwise, what's the point? Okay. I think it's time to conclude the sermon. There's another sermon that's going to take place in about half an hour. So before we conclude, as always, let us transfer the merits that we have all acquired to everyone who deserves this merit. To everyone who deserves the merit, anyone and everyone who has in any way, shape or form helped make this event a success, we must think of all of them, whether you know them by name or not, it's insignificant, immaterial, doesn't matter. Can you name one person in this gathering that has not been a father to you in a previous birth? One person? Can you point one person in this audience that has not been a mother to you? No, there's not one person. Every one of you has been a father to me. Every one of you has been a mother to me. And today as a monk, as I've told you before, all of you are my mother. All of you are my father. Because none of this I've earned for myself. You have gifted me this robe, my arms, gold, shelter, medicine, all this you give me. Just like my parents used to when I was a lay person. So each and every one of you are parents to me. But what I want you all to think about is when we transfer merits, all these beings that we think of, they're all related to us in some way, shape or form. So think of all of them and transfer merits when we do so. Okay. So, let us start with reflecting on the absolute reality that is because of the Samma Sambuddha that we have this Dhamma today. It's because he sacrificed his life over many countless eons in samsara for the salvation of all of us, for the liberation of all of us, that we have this gift of Dhamma today. And it's thanks to all the bhikkhu bhikkhunis, upasaka upasikas who sacrificed their lives to protect and preserve the Dhamma and the Tripitaka that we have this Dhamma today. So may all those bhikkhu bhikkhunis, upasaka upasikas, wherever they may be today, perhaps some of them are born in the woeful plain today,
If so, may the merits that we have all acquired today help them be born in the blissful plane, and may the merits help them all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also take a moment to spare a moment to pass our merits, transfer our merits to all the bhikkhu, bhikkhunis, upasaka, upasikas around the world who strive and work hard day and night to practice this path, to complete the journey that the Lord Buddha laid out in front of all of us. Some of them living ascetic lives, some of them living with very little, all in the hope of fulfilling this journey to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, as well as disseminating the Buddha's teaching, sharing the Buddha's teaching for the benefit of all worldly beings in the hope that they all may be able to redeem themselves from the shackles of samsara. So may all those beings, bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasaka, upasikas, rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also, may all the devas, spirits, demons and the dead that we invited prior to the start of this sermon rejoice in the meritorious deed that we have all conducted today. May the merits that we have all acquired today help them continue to enjoy the blissful, continue to enjoy life in the blissful planes, as well as be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in the very births that they are in themselves. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, spare a moment for everyone in your family, your mother, your father, your brothers, your sisters, your uncles, aunts, your grandparents, your cousins, nephews, any of your neighbors, your friends, anyone who has helped you come to where you are today, whether that be in your social life or in your spiritual life, anyone that might have guided you, that might have offered you a glass of water perhaps when you are thirsty, or just a meal when you are hungry, or perhaps guided you when you had lost your way. Anyone and everyone literally who might have helped you be where you are today, may they all rejoice in the merits that we have acquired, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this very birth itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may all the merits that we have all acquired today empower all those beings who are working hard night and day, striving to attain the noble achievements, or achieve the noble attainments of Sotapanna, Sakrudagami, Anagami, and finally, like in the era of the Samma Sambuddha, the Gautama Sambuddha and Mahanse, in the era of the great elder Sariputta Maharaja and Mahanse, in the era of the great elder Moggallana Maharaja and Mahanse, may there be many hundreds and thousands of Arahat and Mahanses in this very blessed land very soon through the acquired merits that we have all gained today. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may all the merits that we have all acquired today in preaching this sermon and in listening to this sermon, as well as the monks of this temple, the chief incumbent monk, the most venerable Ubhaya Dhammaloka Nayaka Swami Mahanse, as well as all the other resident monks of this temple, and anyone who made these facilities available, by even if it was by just offering you a glass of water or by arranging the seats, inviting you all to be here today, anyone and everyone who might have helped us, may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in the era of this Gautama Samma Sambuddha Mahanse itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May all beings attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. May the triple gem bless you all. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, before we conclude, as usual, let us do the Arya Maitri Bhavana for a few minutes. I think by now you all know why we do this and how important it is for all of us. Because of all the times that we have been in debt to everyone, people that we might have abused, people we might have slandered, people whose path we might have blocked, either knowingly or unknowingly, this is the way to pay back. And this is the way to clear any obstacles that are in our path to our progress and our journey in samsara towards Nibbana. Okay, so if you know the Arya Maitri Bhavana, you're welcome to chant it with me. If not, then reflect on what it is that we are saying, we are reciting, and make it a point to try and practice it at least once a day.
Mamad siyalu loka siyalu satnayo sansara. Sarada-nivetva Sansara-roga-nivetva Sansara-ginnan-nivetva Sansara-anduran-nivetva Nibbana-parama-sukhayan Sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satmayo Raga bandhanayen midetva Dvesha bandhanayen midetva Moha bandhanayen midetva Mara bandhanayen midetva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satmayo Dukkha ginnen midetva Domanassayen midetva Shoka ginnen midetva Upayasayen midetva Paridevayen midetva Yampitchanna labati tampi dukken midetva Sankhittena panchopadanaskandayen midetva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetva Kama loka anatai Eyin midetva Rupa loka anatai Eyin midetva Arupa loka anatai Eyin midetva Siyalu loka anatai Eyin midetva Atharimanatai Atharimavetva Noelmanatai Noelmavetva Midimanatai Midimavetva Nivanamanatai Nivanamavetva Nivanamanatai Nivanamavetva Nivanamanatai Nivanamavetva Nivanamanatai Nivanamavetva Nivanamanatai Nivanamavetva Nivanamanatai Nivanamavetva
Remember again what I've been trying to say throughout this sermon. It's okay to meditate, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's what you do when you think you're meditating, that's where the problem is. Don't fall for people's traps. Everyone's out there to trap you in some way, shape or form because all they're interested is in their own self-preservation, not in yours. Ultimately, everyone in this world is selfish. That's the truth. Ultimately, everyone is selfish. So you've got to look after yourself. Unless you come across an Arahatun Mahanse who has completely eradicated Raga, Dvesha, Moha, and with that, this self, Mama. When that is completely eradicated, then you have come across someone who is completely selfless. But until such time, everyone is at least a tiny modicum selfish. So, in your own interest, make sure that you don't fall into these traps. Meditate, but in meditation, reflect on the Dhamma. Listen to these CDs on YouTube. You know, these are available now on the internet. This is being streamed live, and as soon as the sermon ends, it's available to listen offline. So you can do that. A reminder to everyone that these sermons are and will be conducted in English for the foreseeable future. Every Sunday at 2:30. So, I mean, if you understand Sinhala, then clearly there is no need for you to come along to this. But the reason we do this is for the benefit of those who struggle with Sinhala, or for those who do not understand any Sinhala at all. Native English speakers and also listeners online. So remember, when we first started, these were done in front of a laptop. I sat in front of a laptop and I was preaching to a computer. That was fun. So if you have children who go to international schools, for some, you know, Sinhala might not be their main language of communication. If they struggle to understand the Buddha's teaching in Sinhala, then bring them along, friends and family, as well as your friends, maybe relatives who are resident in other countries. And if for them they prefer to listen to sermons in English, then pass on this information, and may they be able to listen to these sermons through your, I mean, any person that you encourage to come and listen to this, you're earning merits by doing so as well. May the Noble Triple Gem bless you all. Sama Sambuddha Sarana.